The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit. Track budgets and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Teddy, put down that book for a second. The mail came.
And?
Well, there's a letter here. It's postmarked from Harvard.
Harvard?
Truly unexpected mail. To imagine the Kaczynskis got a letter from Harvard. Well, let's go ahead and open it. It's probably a mistake. I doubt you got a letter from Harvard. Dear Theodore,
yes?
Congratulations. I am delighted to inform you that the Committee on Admissions has admitted you to Harvard with a full math scholarship.
Harvard.
But you're
Harvard.
Only 16, Theodore.
Harvard. I've been
this
accepted
is a total
to
catastrophe.
Harvard.
You're going to leave your mommy Harvard. To go to Harvard?
Harvard.
This is the letter that killed your mother. To think you would abandon your sweet old mom. It would have been better for Harvard to send me a bomb. To blow me apart. Shatter my heart by taking away my Theodore. Dear Theodore, dear Theodore, why would you leave your mommy? Who will give me baths? Who rub my feet? Who will put lotion into my cracked and drying teeth? Who will do it, Theodore? Dear Theodore, dear Theodore, why would you leave your mommy? Who will give me baths? Who rub my feet? Who will put lotion into my cracked and drying teats? Who will do it, Theodore?
And there's a little sneak peek of an upcoming musical that I have been directing, acting in, doing the music for, singing in, as well as designing all the sets, building all the sets, doing all the lighting, and doing pretty much everything. In fact, I'm the only person running the entire show, including working at the box office. And to be honest, it's really fucking hard. And I don't know exactly why I thought I could do an entire Broadway production with no one to help me. Maybe I should start microdosing. Now, I am so excited for you to dive into today's podcast. But first, this.
When you buy coffee at the store, did you know it's usually too old? Why not go to a graveyard and drink juice out of some coffin? Trade coffee, fixes this terrible problem. Do you really want to drink rotten bean juice? Why not treat yourself right with Trade Coffee?
You know what I used to think? I used to think, I'm not a coffee snob. I just like coffee, whatever. Just give me a cup of coffee. I'm not one of those people in intelligentsia with a swirly mustache and the suspenders. Carries around a full-size mechanic typewriter. I'm a normal person, but I went to Trade Coffee. I took their test. Let their algorithm scan my coffee mind, and as it turns out, I have coffee opinions. You don't have to be somebody who wears vests and carries around War and Peace to have actual coffee preference. You can just be a normal person, and most of us, we don't have time to figure out our coffee opinions or how to get incredible coffee, and this is where Trade comes in. They deliver a bag of freshly roasted coffee as whole beans or ground for however you brew it at home. And they guarantee you'll love your first order or they'll replace it for free. Trade has delivered over 5 million bags of fresh coffee with more than 750,000 positive reviews. Do me a favor, just go to their website, take the test, let them send you some of this delicious coffee so that post-coitus, after a night of lovemaking with your muse, you can hand them a delicious mug of rare, wonderful coffee from 60 of the country's best craft roasters. Small businesses who pay farmers fair prices to sustainably source the greatest beans from all around the world. Right now, Trade is offering new subscribers a total of $30 off your first order plus free shipping when you go to drinktrade.com/Duncan. That's more than 40 cups of coffee for free. Get started by taking their quiz at drinktrade.com/Duncan and let Trade find you a coffee you'll love. That's drinktrade.com/Duncan for $30 off. Thank you, Trade. While my clone was reading that commercial, I was smearing adrenochrome on my nipples and thinking that maybe I shouldn't do the Broadway show. Maybe I bit off a little more than I could chew by saying I could do everything myself.
And then I realized I have nine clones. I'm just going to let the clones do it.
Help me.
This is Clone 5 letting you know that we have a fantastic podcast for you today with Johnny Pemberton. You've probably seen Johnny on the Boob Tube. No, I'm doing this one.
No, I'm doing it.
Fine.
What the fuck?
Do it. Which clone is that? It's me, Clone 3, and I will do the intro like Duncan asked me to
do. No, I didn't. You're supposed to be in your pod. You have molluscum.
Fine, I'll go back in my fucking pod.
No, it's not gross. It's very common for clones to get molluscum.
It goes away. God damn it. Every clone, back in your pods now. Casey, get them in the pods.
Please don't make us go back in our pods.
I don't want to go back in the pod. Well, you're going. You know, a lot of people think being a billionaire is easy, and I get it. I'm not complaining. I think I do have a few advantages over, you know, most people in the sense that I've got an army of clones, underground bunkers. I've got a tiny maze in my brain filled with extra dimensional beings that give me ideas of things to say. And of course, 17 blimps. But I got to tell you, clones are not quite as luxurious as they might seem. Maybe you've watched Beverly Hills Top Clones or My Favorite Clone, but it's not like that. That's just TV. You've got to bathe the clones, feed the clones, distinguish the clones, keep the clones happy, and euthanize the clones when they start malfunctioning or develop a fungal rot. My point is this: more clones, more problems. Sometimes the answer to finding peace in our life is not to duplicate ourselves into genetic reflections that do most of our work, but to maybe remove a few clones from your clone
fleet.
Because I go to the bathroom and come back and one of my fucking clones is disguising himself as me. Done. He's done. Destroy him. Sorry about that, guys. That was Clone 8, who is the only clone that doesn't realize he's a fucking clone. And I keep walking in on him with my wife. He drives my car around and he makes terrible financial decisions and he's done terrible things on the road that I would never do. And that's the last you're going to see of him. We've got a great podcast for you today. Johnny Pemberton is here with us. You probably know Johnny from Superstore or the many movies he's been in or his awesome podcast, Live to Tape, or maybe you follow his hilarious Twitch streams, but listen to this. If you're going to be in LA on Friday, April 22nd, you must, it's an order, you must go see his incredible one-person show, Reggae Colostomy Back. Now, I know what you're thinking. Is this another dumb joke? Is that a joke name for a show? No. Johnny is not only an incredibly talented comedian, he's also an amazing actor, and this one-person show is one of the coolest live stage shows I've ever seen. So I really hope you'll go see him. It's Friday, April 22nd. It's called Reggae Colostomy Bag, and it's going to be in Los Angeles. The links are going to be at DuncanTrussell.com. And of course, Johnny will sometimes feature for me on the road. We're going to be in Portland,
this weekend. So if you're listening to this on the weekend of March 30th, we're going to be there. March 31st, March 32nd, March 33rd at Helium. You can find ticket links at DuncanTrussell.com. And now, everybody, please welcome back to the DTFH, Johnny Pemberton. Johnny, welcome back to the DTFH. Let's start off. I want to see if you can identify what this sound is.
Okay, I'm listening.
Oh, wow.
I think that may be, there's two possible things. That could be one of those early field recordings from when they first allowed clubbing of seals in Canada.
Yeah.
Or it could be a clip from the Oscars.
You know what? Mm-hmm. It's seals.
It is,
but,
okay.
Yeah, but now I'll play the clip from the Oscars.
God, I'm ready.
That's so cool, though, man. It's so amazing that you... So you had that... I guess you had that relaxation CD?
Uh-huh.
The Clubbing of the Seals?
The Clubbing of the Seals. The one that came with the Canadian Club whiskey when they did the expansion pack.
Yeah, that was incredible. And they put still, to this day, if I can't sleep, I just play that album and I'm out. Yeah. Okay, now here's the sound from the Oscars.
I'm ready.
Oh, wow.
Okay, that sounds similar, but not the same.
Not quite the same, but
yeah.
To me, that's kind of the remarkable thing. A lot of people are writing about how identical, almost identical, the sound of Chris Rock being slapped by Will Smith is to the clubbing of a baby seal.
Yeah. An exciting thing.
You know, well, to quote Mark Twain, you know, history doesn't repeat, but it sometimes echoes.
Uh-huh.
And I was just wondering, what are your thoughts on that? Like, what are the odds that the sound of clubbing a baby seal would be almost identical to the sound of two of the great celebrities of our time?
Two of the great celebrities.
You know, in a sort of public...
I would say, what are my thoughts on that? You know, it's mixed. I feel a lot of different things. I feel embarrassed. My first thought was utter and sheer embarrassment.
Mm.
And then it sort of warmed up to walking around outside in circles, being like, okay, what's happening? What happened? How did this happen?
Yeah.
How can this torturous thing happen again?
Okay.
We already knew it was bad.
Unreal. And this, by the way, the circle thing, this, so I watch it, I throw my hands up in the air, I go outside, I start walking around in circles, and I look over, my neighbor has come outside, is walking around in circles, all my neighbors start coming out, and everyone just starts walking around in circles. I didn't even know why I was doing it. Then I look around and see everyone has come outside and walk, and now I'm hearing you are doing it too.
Mm-hmm.
What the fuck, man? The potency of that smack sent so many Americans outside, and we all just walked in circles.
Circles. Have you ever seen, the whole thing with elephants in the zoo? They do the same thing.
I didn't know that.
I do. When elephants are in captivity, they just walk around slowly in circles because they're losing their minds.
It was like that. Like, I when it happened, I really I have a tenuous grip on reality as it is, and in that moment, it felt like I'd been hanging on a branch and Will Smith just came and pulled my fingers one at a time off the branch until I fell backwards into some abyss.
Yeah, I say I felt a similar way. It was less of an abyss and more of if I had taken a step forward. And if my foot, instead of hitting the ground, went through and I just flipped upside down. And if it was daylight, it became nighttime.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Just flipped.
So you just had a reversal, basically. Mm-hmm. You just felt like your day turned into night, your night turned into day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Music started playing backwards.
Yeah.
I suddenly found shrimp to be good, delicious things. And I'm not a big shrimp guy, but I was like, man, I like shrimp.
Jesus Christ. Yeah. So you got fucked up.
Yeah, I got fucked up.
Are you okay now? Are you doing better?
That's the question, is are you okay? That's what we're asking ourselves. I've been watching a lot of old vintage Jon Stewart clips. Ugh. from pre-9/11.
Yeah,
that
yeah,
really
yeah,
helps
yeah.
a lot.
Oh my God. Oh
or
my
sorry,
God.
Not pre-9/11, but I guess all around, not around 9/11, but way before 9/11 and when after we stopped caring about 9/11.
Yeah.
It was like kind of like, okay, you know, that happened, but let's get back to the business.
Those old Stewart clips pre-9/11, man, it's like when you, I don't know if you've ever had jock itch, but for me, like when I'm really spiraling, it feels like that first spray. It stings a little bit, but it cools you down.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, man. Yeah. I got to tell you, man, one of the things that did give me a little bit of relief as I, along with so many other Americans, have just been spiraling since that moment. One of the things that did give me some relief was your poem about the incident. And I wondered if you could share a little bit of it. For folks who don't subscribe to it, there's a wonderful blog at Vlogspot.
Well, I mean, it's a private one. I haven't made it public yet. I'm still workshopping
Oh,
it.
Shit. I'm sorry. Do you want me to delete that?
No, it's fine, actually, because I've just been... Everything's a work in progress. The idea that it would be finished or something is ridiculous. Why would it be finished?
I love that. Yeah,
it's never finished.
I love that. You know, I think, like, not to diverge too much, but I think we have been programmed to think things have some kind of like ending. That's one of the, I think, byproducts of movies and TV shows, is that things, we have the idea that things resolve when they don't. But anyway, could you just...
I'll launch into it.
Launch into it. Thanks.
Okay. Screech of the tires. As the world turns, picking up the macaroon, the cream, motion blur. I turn off the TV and look to my side. Deep in a pillow lies an old glider hide, slick and fast from uses over the years. Pull it up tight like a hat, down over the ears. I'm out, I'm up, I'm in through the air, flipping, splipping, splashing. Ripping out my hair. What did I just see in front of me on this big 75-inch Costco purchased flat screen TV? Could it be just a visage that's warped from a dream, or just outtakes, an NFT, sort of like a slice of rotted cream? But it's neither, it's nor. As I bust out the door, looking in the air across everywhere, circles galore. The neighbors spinning, beards and mustaches a twist. I lay to the ground, one knee, then two. Concrete is kissed.
Oh, God, Johnny.
Thank you.
It's just... It's so brave. Because a lot of us, we don't have the words.
I'm just a vessel.
I can feel that. Hold on.
It's okay. Take all the time you need.
Thanks. I
need to process.
I love them both so much.
I love Will Smith. The thing is, the thing that really gets me is that people don't understand just how much struggling that was going on, the amount of struggle to deal with the disability.
And he struggles, and Chris Rock is so funny. He makes me laugh. He made me laugh.
He made me laugh too. Because I think about both people. And I feel like, why do we have to choose?
I don't know who's side of one.
I don't want to.
What does it mean? What does it mean for comedy? Come on, let's get it. Let's take a break. Let's just get it. We're good.
Okay.
we're back.
Hey, Duncan. Great to see you.
Good to see you, Johnny. Wow. Oh, wow.
Sun is shining.
Yeah. The sun is shining. And what a fucking week, man. It was...
What a week.
It was Oscar's week.
Schumer.
Okay. And we're back. Sorry. Yeah. Little technical error there, gang.
Great. No problem. I'm fine. Oh. Everything's on the level now. It's okay. No problem.
Dude, man. Men in Black is such a good franchise.
I haven't really actually liked Wild West quite a bit. It was Kenneth Branagh who wrote Belfast. He just, you know, wrote that, and it's also to have to see Kenneth Branagh and Will Smith together after 20 years. It's
You got. Okay, well, it's 2 days later, gang, and I think we've finally gotten our shit together. Sorry about that. I know a lot of y'all are probably feeling the tsunami, the emotional tsunami from the incident, is what we'll just call it out, and we won't go into any more detail about it or talk about it. Johnny, how was the road? I know you went out recently. Why don't you tell me a little bit about it?
It was pretty good. I forgot how exhausting it is. It's definitely like a thing where I forgot how much I am not good at driving.
Oh, fuck. You were driving from show
to
show. Ooh,
every day.
Ooh, baby. That's hardcore. That's hardcore, man. Fuck. I remember that. Jesus Christ. You drive to the show, you check into your hotel, anything goes wrong, you're so fucked, man. Like,
because you have every time, every second's precious. You got to have it to decompress. You just got to have. And also, the best thing is how much utter trash food. I just ate some food I got to have something.
What'd you eat?
The worst thing I think was probably some. Oh my God, just thinking about it makes me laugh. When you go to a place that has pizza and you get something called a flatbread, you ever got a flatbread? Ooh. Flatbread's where they basically take the pizza dough, they put a bunch of mashed garlic on it, maybe some balsamic vinegar, and they gave me a cup of some type of I think it was goat cheese dip.
Why'd you order that?
Because I thought it would be kind of light, maybe. What? Instead of getting a whole pizza.
Don't get it. Don't just I get it though, man. You see,
it was a mistake.
This is why my Caesar salad. This is why I get chicken Caesar salad on the fucking road. It's like you get a chicken Caesar, they can't fuck it up. It's so basic. It's very few ingredients. You get some chicken, you get some lettuce, you get some cheese, and that's it. You don't have to roll the fucking dice because you don't want to. You know what you don't want? You don't want, if you are going to eat before a show, you don't want to get on stage and you have food poisoning. You don't want to have to get on stage and maybe shit your pants.
Yeah. I was prepared to do it, but I didn't have to. I mean, I only ate a little bit of the flatbread garlic with the goat cheese beforehand. I ate the rest of it later over a trash can.
Oh my fucking God, man. That's brave. That's really, but I get it. But how many shows in were you when you made that decision?
I think I was the last show.
Yeah, there you go. Your mind's a blur. You don't even know what's happening. You're whirling around. It's fucking, you don't know. You're in a weird haze.
It felt pretty good though. I got to say, 4 shows in 4 days.
Yeah.
I haven't done that in a long time. And by the fourth one, it's weird how, because the fourth one, they didn't have, this was kind of a last minute tour, they didn't have the stage set up as well as it should have been. There wasn't, there was not lighting.
Yeah.
And I was like, hey, there's got to be some lighting because you can't see the comedian's face. And if you can't see someone's face, that really causes a problem. That's a real problem if you can't see someone's face.
Right.
And so he was like, okay, we'll have to kind of maybe stop down for a second and I'll just stretch. I'm like, yeah, let's do that. That's worth it. And we got one light They had one light turned on, and it still wasn't great, but it made all the world a difference.
Holy fuck. Where, see, that's yeah. that version of the road, man, is so crazy in yeah. People are inviting you to come perform.
Right.
And you like the things that you have grown accustomed to as a comedian, just things that seem obvious.
Right.
They don't know that. They yeah. don't know about the lights. You know who's a stickler for this shit?
Todd Glass. Yeah, I remember hearing him say this one time. Actually, I had a conversation with a few people just a few weeks ago about this very night when he came into a show in LA. He was like, hey guys, a couple things. You got to rope off these back seats so they can't go up there. You got to have music playing. You got to do these things. You got to do them. It's yeah. like, do them right now. Do them right now, because if you do, it'll make your show 100% better.
Yep.
It'll make it 100% better, and it's so easy to do because everybody, we always forget that, like, most people just will kind of do what they're told if it's reasonable.
Yeah.
They can say, oh, you can't sit there. Like, oh, I'm sorry, I won't sit there.
Glass is bar rescue for shows. Like, he mm-hmm. comes, how many shows has he saved? Like, if there's,
probably like, everyone he's ever done.
I've seen him do it, and there's stories of how he does it. I've watched him come in with his ferocity. Like, it's hardcore, man. Like, he comes mm-hmm. in and, like, because he's realized that if you don't have that kind of ferocity, it won't happen. That people...
Yeah, you can't be wishy-washy about it. No. You can't be, maybe we could do this? Because people, I don't want to do that because you have to do that. I don't want to do anything.
I just don't, I think, like, probably if you're someone who loves comedy, you're like, maybe I'll put on a show. Invite mm-hmm. some comics, pay them to come perform. Your idea of comedy is based on your love of it. You don't understand that it's like you actually have to have these certain things for it to work. Like, mm-hmm. and you know the weird novelty shows people do, do it at a fucking laundromat or whatever. Those they know about those, and so from those they assume like, you don't really need anything other than a dude on stage. Like, you don't even need a mic, just somebody up there talking will be funny.
It's one thing if you're going to perform for the troops or something like that, where it's people who just, yeah, man, anything you can do, we will appreciate it because we're out here in a bunker. And that's different than being a bunch of drunk people in like Mississippi who are ready to be like 5 seconds behind you and scream shit because they feel like they can because the environment doesn't tell them that they can't.
Right. Yeah. Or they're like, hey, we're going to put a band up in front of you. That's always fucking fun.
I remember that one time. Yeah. And we were trying to figure out, like, why does this not work? It's because it's like sapping all the energy from people because it's you have to pay attention to this thing.
Yep. Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. By the time you get up there, they've been watching like an hour of a quartet. Uh-huh. And it's like they're exhausted. They've been paying attention. But you get the idea behind it is always steeped.
You get the idea. It's seems steeped like in a good love. Idea. Mm-hmm.
It's steeped in the love of comedy. It's this idea of like, man, this is going to be fucking artistic and beautiful. I'm going to have a noise band before y'all go up.
Yeah.
A noise band. And then you're going to go up and it's going to be incredible. You got to follow a fucking noise band. And someone playing like pigs squealing backwards.
That?
No, it just seems like something that I would end up encountering.
And band afterwards can be pretty fun though.
Yeah. Band afterwards is cool.
They get to rock out, and if you want to stay, you can stay. I did this show years ago in Boston. This is a great band called Bruvs, Bruvs. And they have like this, it's like a duo or a trio. It's like, sounds like very 90s kind of alternative rock. And they played after the show. They just like gung ho, just brought all their stuff in right afterwards.
That's cool.
And they played, and it was so much fun because it was after the show. And we're all just hanging out, watching this really loud band play. And a bunch of cops were there and shit. And they were enjoying it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. You know, like stories of comics like Neil Hamburger are pretty mm-hmm. awesome because he's someone who like was forged on in that kind of situation,
yeah.
right?
So
didn't
different.
He open? Who did he open up for? He used to open up for
maybe Tool or something.
Something like that, like Tool or something. Like Neil Hamburger, just like super famous super hardcore rock bands where no one's expecting a comedian, and he would go up in front of these like hostile audiences. I'm guessing hostile. I don't know. Like,
oh, at least like, it's not super friendly.
It's not like if you had to write down like here's where you want to be is like going up in front of Tool. Trying to tell jokes.
God, I think about that now because there's so many comics who've opened for bands. I don't get that. Sounds so scary to me. I think I would be so scared the first five shows.
I guess it's, you know, that's, I think that's one of the crazy things about comedy is like, you know, all if you can survive opening up for Tool mentally and physically, then after that, you're going to be, look at Neil Hamburger. That is a bulletproof comedian.
Yeah.
That is a comedian who is like, I can't imagine anything like knocking him off course or anything.
Well, we are talking about Neil Hamburger, who is not an actual person. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I think that's a big part of it. It's because you have a character. Character is different than a person. But also, I mean, sometimes you think about like Larry the Cable Guy, right? That's a character. It's not
right.
A person. But that's the character is why he's so successful, is because you have this character you do. And it's just people know it's a character, but they don't care. They don't care.
Yeah, that's one of the interesting branches on the comedy tree where people take on a persona. Andy Kaufman, you could say, did that.
Yeah, well, because Tony Clifton's a persona.
Tony Clifton.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. That's really cool, man. I mean, it's like very liberating, right? Like the moment you decide to come out as somebody else, you're sort of unburdened of the need to like reflect
protect
your ego. Right. Mm. Yeah. Is that something you like about acting? Is that why you like acting?
You're kidding me 100%. Cause it's that thing where you don't have to protect anything. You're just, you get to be someone else. And so you don't have to worry about anything that is said, it's said in the context of that, because it's you're not protecting your ego.
This is why I'm so excited about the fucking metaverse. Everyone makes fun of it, people roll their eyes at it, but my God, it's going to be one of the most liberating things.
Oh, yeah.
When it perfects itself, when it gets, you know, indistinguishable from reality, to be able to go into a simulator as a completely different person, an anonymous person, change your voice, change your gender, whatever you fucking want, and just exist as a completely different thing, fully unburdened by your identity.
Ooh, yeah,
that's gonna be very therapeutic for a lot of people.
Super therapeutic. I mean, it already is happening. People use it all the time for that. I think that's probably why you see all those people who are really into those communities and stuff. A lot of those people are, they've been victims of all different types of psychological abuse, and that's what they find. I mean, you could say like the whole gaming community to some extent, like the classical, not like now so much, has changed so much because so many people are gaming, but you know, a couple years ago and before that, everyone who was really into games was for the most part kind of an outcast or like a nerd or someone who did not really fit in well. So they found this community online through the games where people, you weren't judged on the same characteristics as you would be in real life. And so that's why there's people who are so, so dedicated to it that they just like love it so much.
Yeah, right. It's like, because it's just a relief. It's like, you know, it's so like, being a human is so weirdly claustrophobic in the sense that you don't get to pick your avatar. You know what I mean? Like you could style yourself. You could like grow a beard, wear whatever fucking clothes you want, get tattoos.
Gain a bunch of weight.
But you're still you, you know, in the sense that the people around you have expectations for you to stay just the way you are, right? Like you can't wake up tomorrow as like a bullfighter, like who only speaks Spanish. You got to stay Pemberton. I got to stay Duncan. And that, I don't think people recognize how just burdensome being a human is in that sense, in the sense of like,
it's so burdensome. It's ridiculous because so many people spend so much time and energy trying to alter things about them that are pretty much unchangeable. Like you think about just skincare alone. Like some people have really good skin. Some people have really bad skin. And yeah. the people who have bad skin are always like, God, I wish I could have good skin. And you can do all the things you want. You can drink tons of water. You can do all the creams and lotions and stuff. But at the end of the day, fucking January Jones is going to be hungover as fuck and look 1,000 times better than you just because, you know, it's just it's the nature of that person.
And it's bullshit.
Yeah.
It's fucking bullshit. It is. It's bullshit. Yeah. It's fucking bullshit. It's like, it's ridiculous. And like this, to me, there's so much controversy wrapped up in identity, man. And it's like, you get plastic surgery. Mm-hmm. People are like, fuck you. People will just be like, fuck you, plastic surgery. Look what you did to your fucking face. You're not allowed to do it, man. You're like, you know, there's a huge social stigma against like women using Botox. It's stigmatized, dude. Like,
it's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. Like, because any other, like in video games, changing your avatar, no one in the game is like, would you fucking change your character's face? No one fucking cares. But in real life, one of the unspoken rules of being human, you just gotta stay in the body you're in, the way it is. Yeah. And that's just the way it fucking is. It just upsets the shit out of dumb people. No offense.
There's a lot of pride associated with, I haven't done anything. I'm all natural. Especially, obviously, I mean, women especially have that. That's like a big thing where, like, oh, well, I mean, I'm natural. I haven't done anything.
It's so what?
It's okay. You can do whatever you want to do.
So you did do something. Your fucking DNA spun out your flesh in a way that makes you look like you. So you did do something, but you didn't really. Just whatever the tiny little nanobots that assemble you in every moment are particularly talented. You had fucking nothing to do with it. Like, what? Would you fucking drink enough water? Shut up. You're symmetrical. See, this is the thing. This is what there. If it's like, if suddenly somebody figured out a way to make infinite energy, you know, in a low cost way, the conspiracy theorists are like, yeah, they take them out right away. There's people who figure out how to do that, but the oil industry, they know that it's possible. And anytime it starts popping up, they kill the person or the person vanishes or whatever. But similarly, if some method of altering appearance emerged where all of us could just change into anything that we wanted instantaneously, whoever was coming up with that would be killed by beautiful people. They'd be like, take him fucking out, because all I got is that I'm beautiful. If everyone's beautiful, then it's just my personality.
Oh, God forbid. You have to just have that?
Yeah.
That's scary then, because then you have to actually have something to say, or at least be friendly, or God forbid, be polite.
Yeah. We're talking about a fucking economy. There's an economy out there, man. There's an economy, supply and fucking demand. There's fewer beautiful people than there are like normal people and abnormal people. It's rare. Otherwise, no one would give a fucking shit about it. And like, you know, you're lucky. You get born into that kind of body. You're like, I don't even know what that life must be like. But holy fucking shit, man. If we could all instantaneously just shift, think of what would happen to society. Society would collapse. I think like if that was possible, people like Putin, they would not do war anymore. You know what I mean? If Putin could suddenly just transform into a beautiful, symmetrical human, would he still want to be like the leader of Russia?
Probably not.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This episode of the DTFH is brought to you by Ridge. Listen, man, I feel terrible because I left my Ridge wallet in the car. But I must tell you, I destroy wallets. That's what I do. Like, if you are trying to identify me as an animal, one of my primary characteristics would be he destroys wallets as a practice. I don't even know how I do it. Like, I don't do anything special with them, but by the end of a year, if I've even kept a wallet that long, it looks like somebody was using it to train an attack dog. And I don't know what that is, but Ridge Wallet, my God, it has somehow held up. It feels like I just got it yesterday. These things are like the most durable wallet of all time, and it's compact. It's compact. Not some big old giant stupid wallet. You feel like you're sitting on a little pillow all day, smushing it, getting that ass heat on it, melting down the fibers with your flatulence. Not a Ridge. Ridge wallets are insane. You got to try it out. But now, Ridge has just released the Ridge 2.0, the most refined version of the Ridge wallet. It's 10% lighter, and they've made it even more modular with improved cash straps, money clips, and the AirTag attachments. That's right. You could stick a little AirTag on the thing, and you won't lose your wallet anymore. It's made with premium materials like aluminum, titanium, and carbon fiber. Over 50 colors and styles to choose from. Of course, I picked Black Power Wallet. I don't know if they even want me to talk about this, but you got to try their chargers. Check this baby out. Woo! This thing is so good. Look at that. Just sticks to the back of your phone. Beautiful. Built-in chargers. A readout here, so you know how much is charge is left on the thing. And it's, I don't know, man, it holds a ton of battery life. Sorry, Ridge. I don't even know if you want me to read that. So don't just get the wallet. Get the charger. For a limited time, Ridge is having their huge Black Friday sale. Head to RIDGE.com to get up to 47% off your order. This is by far the biggest discount they've given all year. That's Ridge.com for up to 47% off your order during their biggest sale of the year. After you purchase, they will ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them the DTFH sent you. You know what I mean? If Putin could suddenly just transform into a beautiful, symmetrical human, would he still want to be like the leader of Russia?
Probably not. Well, it's kind of like the time machine, right? It's a little bit, that story is similar because you have the two divisions of people. And the one people are the people who know everything, but yeah, they live in the caves. And there are people, remember that scene? And like, I think it's the one of the early versions of it where they touch the guy, the time traveler asks about books and she's like, oh yeah, we have books. And she shows them and he goes to touch one and they just disintegrate because they haven't been touched in eons because they don't read books because they have everything taken care of for them. And they just, you know, fuck in the sun all day.
Fuck in the sun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that is I think that's the one of the very spooky, you know, all the creepy shit they feed us about what to be afraid of. They never mention the stuff to really be afraid of. They never mention the fact that like kids who are on like Adderall, their scores are better in school. They have a chemical advantage over other kids. They don't mention that shit. And some parents can't afford it for their kids, or some parents don't want to give it to their kids. They don't mention the fact that like therapies probably already exist for the super wealthy, those creams you're talking about,
right?
The lotions to like, you know, already
stem cell stuff,
stem like cell
any kind
stuff,
of, any kind of a genetic treatment.
Yeah. And that right now, you know, classism exists as like a, you know, distribution of wealth and medical care. But once people start like amplifying their intelligence with super expensive gene therapies, now we are talking about a weird new race appearing. That, what did Nietzsche call it? The Übermensch.
Really? Okay. What is that exactly?
He has a philosophical idea of it, but it's like, you know, it inspires a lot of fucking sociopaths. Sad, you know, a lot of people who are like, I think it's a kind of being that is like managed to sort of rip off the moral handcuffs, the ethical handcuffs, the laws of whatever culture you happen to be born into. Are they real? Your morality, what is it based on?
Like
what?
A free agent of sorts.
A free agent, yeah.
They can move around wherever they want because they're not bound by like supposed laws of society.
It's a way people who want to do shitty things excuse it as some kind of like intellectual act. They're like, I'm an Übermensch. That's why I shoplift or whatever the fuck. I don't have to follow the rules. I'm probably getting this all wrong, by the way. My apology to my philosophy listeners. But, you know, the point is, this is one of the great things we're approaching, man, which is the species is going to split, man. It's going to fucking split. And it's going to be split between the people who can afford these incredible, like, whatever they are, rejuvenation therapies, and the people who can't. And you're going to have all these beautiful, old, symmetrical people who are geniuses, who can play violin, play piano, tap dance, do backflips, fly an airplane. You know what I mean? Just because they have been all around for thousands of years.
You mean vampires?
Yes!
It's basically just you described vampires.
Vampires! Exactly, dude! That's where we're headed! Planet of fucking super wealthy vampires! Yeah.
My only hope is that, I was just thinking about this yesterday, is the idea that, I look at TikTok a lot, and I feel like I've learned a significant amount from TikTok.
Okay.
Because you learn from watching, I think most people do learn from watching stuff. And I realized there's so many things I know how to do now, like as far as like cooking stuff.
Wow.
That I've just watched it so many times that I have a memory of, like, I'm going to make this salad today. I've never made it before, but I'm pretty sure I'll make it pretty good the first time because I've watched this video so many times of this guy making this salad.
So it's improved your life.
It's going to improve my life. And maybe that, the access to TikTok, because it's so much, there's so much more information on there. And so many more people than there is on Instagram and Twitter combined. Like, the amount of information is staggering. Because you give Instagram is like glamour, it's sexy, it's like all these, it's like status, right?
Yeah.
And Twitter is moral indignation, it's essays, it's all that sort of stuff. Like 100% of journalists are on Twitter, but only 5% of people. It's that. That's Twitter.
Yeah.
But you have TikTok and you have all these young people on there and a lot of old people now who are doing it. And they're doing it with this way where they're on there just like, I'm just going to do it. I'm going to have fun and do it. And I'm not expecting anything. I'm just going to try to do this thing.
Yeah.
And they have a lot of success. And I feel like that is democratized information in the sense where maybe it'll supplant this idea of these elite and hyper intelligent vampires, because you have this, people have so much access to information. I mean, also, I'm talking about my personal algorithm. There's people who see stuff. I get shown stuff sometimes where I'm thinking, like, this is fucking wrong and weird. And
like what?
Just weird, super dark doomer shit, or like misinformation.
Like what? Doomer shit.
I'm trying. Some of it's very, it's like in a meme fashion. It's hard to even describe because it's communicating through memes. It's not like a thing where a guy's saying, did you know that Bill Clinton used to have only one leg and he would use it to beat something like that. It's not like bold-faced information. It's these weird mimetic things where they're showing a slide of something, playing certain types of music.
Okay.
And it's super dark because there's a lot of people, a lot of young people now who are, I mean, you know about these the doomers, right? It's like these people who just are very dead set on the fact that, because there's so much income inequality for their generation and stuff like that.
They're
really, really interested in that, and they talk about it a lot.
Black pill.
Yeah, that kind of thing. Exactly that kind of thing. Anything where it's just very, I mean, we used to call them goths, I think, but it's changed with the information economy. They're not just into dark music anymore. It's like all this very pessimistic stuff. And they have, I suppose they have some reason to believe a lot of that stuff.
Sure. But it's like, it's like the like classic goth was a person who was fixated on death. And this fixation like has these roots in Victorian culture. It's romantic, and they were obsessed with death too. And they would have like, what do they call it? Memento mori or whatever. They would have like
memento mori.
Bits of hair from dead people and the pictures with a corpse, which by the way, if you see these old pictures with a corpse, the corpse, you can always tell the corpse no matter how well that they've done the work, because the corpse is more in focus because it's not moving, whereas like a little blurry. Anyway, but so you're saying this has evolved where it's like now instead of a kind of romantic celebration, fetishization of one's own mortality, or it's like the same thing but for society as a whole.
Yeah, there's a little bit of incel stuff mixed in there too.
Ugh, okay.
Which I just hate to see. I just hate that shit so much, because the whole incel stuff too. I mean, I had a joke about it. I kind of abandoned it, but I want to try to figure out it again. It's just about the idea of if you're an incel, you basically have decided, I just don't want to do anything. Like,
right.
You know, no. Some people get laid who are super symmetrical, but if you're not, it's like, oh, you just have to do stuff. You have to like do anything. Just practice anything.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's a weirdly materialistic philosophy in the sense that it's also nihilistic.
Oh, it's so nihilistic. Yeah. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, again, the whole incel thing gets fixed by the metaverse. The whole incel thing gets repaired by.
So it does. Yeah. Yeah.
By this. I can kind of see the forms it's going to take, you know, and I know, I get it, man. People go in the fucking metaverse, people go into VR, into what's it called, VR chat or whatever, and they're like, this is stupid, this is stupid, this is shitty graphics, you look around, you're like, this is dumb, it's just a bunch of fucking kids, whatever, it's fucking stupid. But it's like, yeah, you're right now it's blurry graphics, we don't have the processing power to like create like
real
integration. So close. And then of course it's going to be augmented reality, like you will be able to somehow indicate or have something on you that people around you in augmented reality, if they have this a setting, they'll see you as a different thing, as a thing you want to be seen, right, versus how you are. And I think it'll get to the point where it's considered rude to, you know, look at people as they are, or like you'll have to ask them, like, do you mind if I look at you without your AR on? You know what I mean? Like clothes or something. It's like a form of nudity, except it's your actual body or something like that. And then I think that will probably, there'll be some intersect with haptic technology so that, you know, when you touch someone's face, you actually feel their AR mask that they're wearing versus their real face, you know? Somewhere in there, this kind of incredible liberation will happen for so many people encumbered by their physical form. And like, it's a plague right now. I mean, it's a plague. People are just horrified by their own bodies.
I suppose there's also like there's some sort of like compromise there, where maybe when you do the thing that is when you put on the mask, like the digital mask, maybe that makes you feel better about your actual self somehow.
Yeah.
Because you learn to accept this. I mean, isn't it about acceptance? Like, you have to find a way to accept who you are. Otherwise, you're just destined to be miserable.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. This is the, you know, there's so many different ways to do this. You can listen to Tony Robbins. You can get into Buddhism. You can like all kinds of pathways to it, but all of them are you can get therapy.
Yeah.
But all of them take time, dedication, money, and a lot of energy that a lot of people don't have. But just, you know, fill in the blank with whatever the fucking thing is to let a shapeshift, polymorph, whatever you want to call it, just that ability, you know, is going to be so disruptive You know what I mean? Because there's going to be people, you know, like the fitness gurus out there who are suddenly like, yeah, whatever. I don't know if I'm going to work on my meat body. Why? I'm just going to like display this thing that I want to be.
But maybe you want to work on it so you can stay alive longer to enjoy this thing that you're enjoying.
But yeah, possibly you might be, you know, you might want to exercise just to feel you know what I mean?
To like, feel good.
To feel good. And you're, so you, there's a weird pure form of athleticism that might emerge versus exercising to like try to fit into some image that you think is going to like make you attractive. But yeah, I just think it's like a, right now the way we think, you know, I remember my grandmother telling me once how they, at one point, they really didn't have electricity. And I was just like trying to wrap my head around that. Like she got to like, be like, fuck, there's electricity. You know, I mean, I knew they had it, but like, not like we have it now. Yeah. I think like, and then we got to experience that with the internet. A lot of people living today have always lived during the time of the internet. But the fucking next kids. Thing is fucking whatever this thing they're calling the metaverse is, which is like, holy fuck, you lived in a time when you were encumbered by form and you drove your own car? Wow. You drove your own fucking car? Wasn't that dangerous? That's what our grandkids are going to be saying. Like, yeah, fucking people are dying all the time. You'd see them on the side of the road.
We are super crazy dangerous. There's stuff I think about that I did as a kid. I do not know how I'm alive. There's like 15 things that I've done thinking back to where if I saw a kid doing that, I would just be like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Okay. I don't know where your parents are, but you have to stop doing this.
Yeah.
You can't do that.
Like
you can't
what?
Blow up. Like you can't make a pipe bomb and put it in a hole in the ground just to blow it up in the woods.
God. Oh my God.
You can't like, God, you can't climb that 90-foot fir tree with just climbing it. You can't build this like bike jump in the middle of the street.
Oh.
And like, all kinds of just crazy shit, like so much super dangerous shit that somehow I just didn't get killed or hurt. It just
that shit gets left out, doesn't it? Like, it's so easy to forget the peril we put ourselves in as kids. You watch you know TV with teenagers and stuff or kids, and it really doesn't like we really. Really, we're always on the brink of killing ourselves or being murdered. Like, you know, like when a bully was like, I'll kill you when you were a kid, they kind of meant it. You know what I mean? It's not like they were like just trying to scare you. There were lunatics back then. Remember? Did you have a bully? Yeah.
I had one guy. Was really little. Remember him? He did that class thing. He picked me up by my shirt and threw me against a locker. And I was just like, this is real? What?
Yeah.
I must have been like in second grade.
Yeah.
So could barely remember it.
Yeah. It's not like sociopaths turn into sociopaths when they hit puberty. It's like a lot of that. They're just there all the way through, man.
Getting
like,
warmed up.
Dude, I had those fucking water wings, which by the way, you should not do that to your kid. Like,
They're bad? Water wings?
Water wings are very dangerous. Yeah.
God, like, see, this is the kind of thing where, I mean, we had a pool when I was growing up and we had the water wings. Constant water wings.
You didn't question it. You just throw the fucking water wings on. Throw the kid in the pool. Then have your drinks. The kid's fine. He's over there floating like a raft. No, the kid doesn't understand that the water wings are what is keeping them afloat.
Oh, so they just jump in.
They will jump in the pool and just sink to the bottom.
Yeah.
But I can remember, this is one of my earliest memories, floating. I'm in St. Simons Island, Georgia, in a swimming pool, floating in my fucking water wings. And this kid just comes up and pulls the fucking tab on the thing, just like to sink me, just to sink me. And like, and he's watching, you know, like some fucking satanic experiment. One of the things they say is drowning is a silent death. Like by the time a kid starts drowning, you don't hear it. They just go under, like no one's paying attention. But I just think this gets left out in childhood, like how dangerous a thing it was. It probably still is, but back then it's really fucking dangerous.
But what do you think about that though? Because you have kids, do you feel like you have to let them do things that are dangerous because it's how you develop?
I think you have to be able to distinguish between like that and neglect. And I think a lot of people maybe excuse just basic neglect for some kind of like, you know, I'm just letting them learn.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, you, I like, yes, you can't be a hell of, you have to let the kid, like, the, no one's learning to walk without falling down.
How about a potato gun? Would you help your kid build a potato gun?
What's a potato gun? I don't remember how it fucking works.
It's a big PVC pipe that has a two chambers. There's a barrel and there's a chamber. And inside the chamber, you have a grill igniter. You know, the little red button used to ignite your gas grill.
Yeah.
You have the wires that go in there to make a spark. And what you do is you
already no. It's already a no.
Oh, this is a Minnesota thing. Probably. Well, it's everywhere. It's redneck shit. But you build this thing. You go to the hardware store and you build it with, like, you know, $25-$30 worth of material, and you spray hairspray in there, and you close the cap, and then you push the grill igniter button, and you have a potato that's been lodged down in the barrel with a broom pole, and you fire that, you ignite the aerosol that's inside the chamber, and it shoots a fucking Idaho russet out.
That's cool.
And it makes a very loud sound.
That's cool.
And the potato turns to dust against a tree.
Cool as fuck.
It's, and we would put like roofing nails in them and shoot out street lights and stuff. Just,
but your parents weren't the ones showing you how to do that. That was your friends.
My dad took me to the hardware store.
What?
Because I begged him. I was like, can we make the potato gun? Or maybe my mom took me. Probably my mom, because she's the redneck. And we went to the hardware store, and the guy's like, you know, I'm picking out the equipment, and he goes, oh, you guys are building the spud gun? Okay, you're going to want to get this. You need this so reducer cool. flange. And we built the thing, and I one time shot it off. I was looking like, why isn't it sparking? And I looked down the barrel, and I watched to watch the spark, and a big flame shoots right in my face and almost burns my eyebrows off.
Was your dad there?
No, he was asleep.
See, I think like that it's a very, it's, look, it's a cool thing your dad did, and it's a roll of the dice, and you are making these calculations with your kids, and sometimes you do need to like let them run amok. Like, you have to let them run amok. You have to, but you have to know, it's just, man, like our youngest one, I found this like spot on his stomach that I tickle, and he laughs, and it's the greatest thing to hear a baby laugh. So I'll tickle him, and it's the best. So I'd been doing that on the couch, just not even thinking about it. And then he's like crawling on the floor. I'd come home, I start tickling him. He rolls over, he's laughing, and then he just slams his fucking head into the wood floor. It's like just a slap back, because that's what babies do. I forgot. It's the sound of your infant's head smacking into the hardwood floor in front of your wife. You know what I mean? Because that's going to activate like the collie inside of a mother. You know what I mean? They're like, fuck you. What the fuck? Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. And I'm like, I was tickling him. I didn't know. Nothing will extinguish the rage, you know? And then also you have to like make sure. What if you got a concussion? Sounded like a hard hit. I know kids have. So then you have to like do the sad study of them where you're like looking at their eyes, making sure they're not wobbly when they walk. Cause that shit happens. Happens to Aaron's friends. Sometimes their kid just falls, smacks the head, concussion, won't stop crying. Got to go to the fucking hospital. I mean, this is like the reality, because they don't know what they're doing, and neither do we. So it's like finding a happy medium in there.
But they are built so damn tough. Those toddlers are like, you ever heard stories about Buster Keaton when he was a kid?
No.
They used to call him a sack of flour, because parents had a stage act, and he was doing stuff since he was like a baby. They would fucking throw this kid around like he was a literal sack of flour.
Wow.
Just tossing him around like a little fucking, like, just book bag full of Beanie Babies or something.
They love it.
Yeah, but you can't bust them.
Go to the fucking pediatric ER. You can bust them. They're in there. They're busted.
But they recover fast.
They fucking recover, but you don't want to go to the pediatric ER. It fucking sucks. What are you going to tell the doctor? Oh, you ever heard of Buster Keaton when he was a kid? They call him a sack of flour. That's why I tossed the fucking kid into the wall.
Yeah.
You know, but it is. I'm also like, man, I went sledding with Forrest. And like, so brave. Like, we built this ramp. Fucking launching so high in the air, rolling through the snow into the brush, and like just up and running back to the top of the hill to do it again. So I think you just have to let them do that within reason. Yeah. That's all. Basically, you have to think to yourself, when I'm talking to the doctor at the ER, are they going to call Child Protective Services?
Right.
When I'm like, well, you see, I wanted him to jump over thorns. He thought it would be cool, and so he landed in thorns. You know, you have to be just, that's all. You just have to think in that way. Things are different now, man. They don't fuck around at the hospital. Like, they don't fuck around. They, like, so many shitty parents are out there that when you come in with your kid, they're, like, listening to what you're saying, but they're looking at the kid just to make sure. It's their job to make sure the kid's
They must have like a sixth sense about it. They can kind of smell, like, you know, smell when someone's covering, like, oh, he just picked up the kerosene, and we didn't know, you know what I mean? They probably have like they can kind of smell when someone is covering for abuse and when someone is being accidental and when someone's being like truly neglectful.
Dude, it's a nightmare. There's a whole podcast series about this. Like,
emergency rooms and stuff.
A kid fell out of a chair, cracked his skull. They go into the emergency room, and like somehow Child Protective Services gets involved, takes the kid.
Don't listen to this. That sounds like a nightmare to listen to if I was a parent.
Dude, that's what we do as parents. You fucking do. You're right. It has altered my...
Because you'd be scared then. You'd be scared of something you probably shouldn't be scared of, because that's not going to happen to you.
It fucks forensic files up, man. Anytime there's anything with a kid, you're like, God damn it, I can't watch this episode.
I can't even watch it hardly anymore. I really can't.
You can't?
I have trouble. I mean, not the same as you probably, but I know so many people with kids, and I know their kids to where it feels like... It's too sad. It's just too, like, abject. It's abjectly, it's just, you know, it's one of those things where, it's like so pitiful that there's a reason that, like, in a movie, I think, where they, if they want you to let a main character just run ramshot, like John Wick, they kill the dog. Because if you kill a kid, that's just so sad.
You can't
get over the sadness. But the dog is obviously, it shows the cruelty of these people he's killing, but it's not this thing where, it's not this deep, abject, like soul-wrenching sadness. It's a different kind of thing.
Yep. I totally get it, man. Like, but I hate that shit. In the beginning of the movie when they kill the fucking dog, you're just like, fuck you.
But you know what? If it's what it takes to let John Wick do John Wick...
Fine. But you could have come up with another way, but I get it, man. Have you read...
Nothing works.
Have you read The Painted Bird by Jerzy Kaczynski?
No.
Okay. That's a mind fuck you.
Really? Is this a novel? What is it?
Yeah, it's a novel about this kid. I think it's during World War II. He just gets disconnected from his parents and has to wander through the Eastern European countryside. And it's encountering horror after horror after horror until finally... whatever made that kid a kid was just gone, and it was now a basically
is an adult.
It's
an old man.
I don't
want to
ruin it, but
I'll read it.
You know, it's one of the most brutal explorations of that thing you're talking about. Just the reality of what the world does to some kids, like, and how just abjectly and completely perfectly unfair that is.
Yeah, what were we talking about? I feel like we're talking about something a few weeks ago, and it was something about people were talking about, like, I never had a childhood, because, and someone was saying how, well, a lot of people never had a childhood. It's almost like the thing where being able to have a childhood is an absolute luxury.
Right.
It's like such a luxury to be able to have any moment in time where you're just carefree, you know, you can do whatever you want. You can eat. You're being fed. You're being cared for. That time period is such an incredible luxury because so many people throughout history, it's like, well, mom and dad died. I'm 14. I guess I'm. That's it. It's over now. Now I have to do everything.
Dude, there's an animation on YouTube about young chimney sweeps.
Oh, God.
And you know, again, like, I don't know how he veered off here, but, like, I think it's cool to watch these things because I do think humanity as a whole has evolved. Like, we've become a more compassionate species, mostly. We're still fucked up. We're still brutal. You can see that in the news now. But compared to then, which in those days, if your parents died, one option was you become a chimney sweep. And the reason you become a chimney sweep is because your little body could fit up the fucking chimney.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it's basically the animation is just, an account of one of these, of an adult who used to be one of these chimney sweep kids and then became a keeper of chimney sweep kids. And like, yeah, basically like he just talking about how, like, you would have to force them with fire up the fucking chimney. Their legs would get all fucking cut up, and like the more they did it, it would eventually callus over, but you'd have to force them to cut their legs over and over again until they got fucking, and a lot of the times they just get stuck up there and they just die of fright, you know. And like that, imagine that you fucking hire somebody to clean your chimney, you end up with a fucking Victorian 5-year old stuck in your chimney.
Mad at them. What were you doing up there? Get them out of there. How dare he die in the chimney? How dare he? Death in our chimney. We have to move now for a fortnight to go someplace else. So I do clean the bones out to burn little boy out of here.
Bloody little boy in the chimney.
Little bastard.
Think about that. That was what people were like, man. Like, we've gone through so many vicious phases. It's so crazy to think of that. And the scary thing is to think, like, God damn it, how close are we to returning to that? Like, how far away are we from, like, going back to that level of brutality?
Hopefully we'll get to see it. That's all I care about.
Jesus Christ!
I just want to see it. You know what I mean? I want to be...
you want to see the brutality?
I want to be able to see the full arc, you know, coming from rotary phone, coming from all that stuff, seeing, remember when my dad got a beeper and then he got a cell phone.
Yeah.
All these things that changed. And then obviously we're where we are now, and just be able to live maybe through like a cataclysm. And then see some sort of, if it's going to happen, I would love to be able to see it. Just to see, like, witness the sheer, like, the thing. Like, when I was hiking one time, I was obviously super, super high off adrenaline. It was one of the first times I did, like, a big hike. And I get to the top there. I'm listening to Philip Glass on a speaker.
Oh my God,
so it's, like,
damn.
Just, like, super cinematic.
Yeah.
With a couple other people. Get to the top. And you look out in this valley, like we're now off the trail. We're in the middle of fucking nowhere. And you look out and you see just this huge expanse of trees and valley and stuff. And all I could think was like, it was just so much information, so much pure neutrality, like the sheer amount of uncaring neutrality that's out there.
Uh-huh.
There's all this space and things that doesn't give a fuck about if I live or die. It cares not even like the tiniest bit about me. And looking at it, it's like looking into like an abyss or something. And it felt so like, holy shit, so scary. And I kind of feel like it would be interesting to, you know, when you see the thing, when you're in the thing that's terrible, you stop for a second and be like, oh my God, this is like, if you were in World War One and you looked out over no man's land, for a second you might get a little high because you're in the sheer terror of existence.
Yeah.
There's that moment where it's very, very pure terror. It's almost like you're crossing over into like a God state of some sort.
Whoa, right. Yeah, I like that. I mean, you know what, though? If I don't think it is ambivalent. I think actually there's some deep subconscious longing that the forest has for you to die so it can eat you.
There you go. So it's not even ambivalent. It's not neutral.
It's like, oh, there's some fucking carbon. Die. Become me. Become me. You know, and join us. It's like Evil Dead 2. You know what I mean? The way that if I had to guess, he was trying to portray what you're talking about, which is what they call the eldritch horror. He's trying to portray this, like, the one of the ways of looking at the world, which is, this thing's way older than you.
Oh, God.
And you're barely here, and you're mostly just food for it. I mean, you are just food. And also, you deserve to be eaten, because you've been eating. So, like, you've been eating it. It's going to eat you. It gets the last laugh. Mm-hmm. And so, like, the way Lovecraft embodies that thing you're talking, the primordial, non-caring, ambivalent, yet consuming face of nature just wants to eat. Give me your atoms. I want to fucking suck your atoms. It's so cool. It's like a centrifuge, you know? It wants to spin you into it. Once you've spun into it enough, you're completely forgotten. Like, no one even remembers you once you've been spun deep enough into the planet. Good night, everyone. It's a children's book I'm working on.
It's called Goodnight, Everyone?
It's called Goodnight, Everyone, and it's about how the forest wants to eat you.
I would like to be eaten by a tree, I think.
Absolutely. I mean, this is the other thing. Like, really, the horror comes from more of like a delusion regarding that you're different from that. You know, like, you look at it, the thing, and you're like, this thing is not me. I'm this other thing that has motivation and feeling and stuff. There's something to me more than this stuff.
I'm special.
Yeah. But isn't that what the horror comes from? Is really, it's more that it's like, you're no more special than the rest of it.
Yeah, I think when I say horror, I kind of mean like it's delicious. It's like this delicious horror where you feel for a second, you feel like you aren't yourself, and it feels good. I told you about that thing where when I died doing breath work.
Yeah. Tell me again, though, when you were doing the holotropic breath work thing.
Yeah. I did this breath work class, and I did a breath work thing once before, like 2 years ago. And so I was like, I think I kind of understand this. And woman doing the class, she was like, you know, you're going to feel your hands are probably going to tingle a bit. And that's normal. So I was recognized that. I was laying on my back, like they say, I had headphones on, and it was, you know, I had a blanket on my legs. I was the only person at home, so I knew I wasn't getting disturbed or anything. And it was pretty dark in the room. And did the whole breathwork thing. It's like she leads you through all the breathwork, and you keep breathing deeper and deeper and deeper. And towards the end, as we're leaving, I start, my hands really feel like fully numb. I can't feel them. And at some point, I basically, like, I felt like I was passing out. Like, when I get my blood drawn, a lot of times I will pass out afterwards.
Yeah.
Not during, but afterwards.
Right.
Like maybe 5 seconds out after they've taken the needle out, I will black out.
Okay.
And I go to like a hell realm. It's not like, it's sort of like a nightmare. I go to a nightmare for maybe 15 seconds at the most. Then I wake back up and they're like, are you okay? You okay? I'm like, I'm always like so grateful to be alive at that moment. Like, oh, thank fucking God. Cause I was just felt like I was dying.
Yeah.
And so in this breathwork class at the end of it, it's getting very psychedelic, right? Very psychedelic, very emotional. And at some point I feel myself going to that same place that I have been before when I've passed out, and it was like a nightmare realm. Except this time I went there and I felt like I looked at it and I was like, oh, I'm dying right now. I'm dead. I have just died. And it was funny to me. It was like this thing where I was laughing at it because I wasn't scared at all. Because when those times when I've passed out and gone to the nightmare area, I was terrified.
Like, right.
Absolutely terrified. But in this case, I felt like super cogent and very like, oh, this is nothing. This is, doesn't matter.
What
just
do you mean?
Died.
What are you seeing, like demons? Like, what do you mean hell realm?
Like, it was just like, it felt, it wasn't so much visual as a feeling. Like, I felt like, oh, I have died now, but it's okay that I have died. It's not a terror. It's not like a thing where I should be terribly scared of death.
Right.
It felt like a thing where when you die, it's just, it's okay. And it's totally fine. It's just where you're going to, if you're going to go there, you're going to go there and you can't stop it. And so there's no reason to be afraid of it.
Right.
I don't know. It was the strangest thing I've ever had happen as far as like one of the most psychedelic, I mean, beyond psychedelic, it felt just incredibly, I mean, I can't, it's almost impossible to describe. I mean, it is impossible to describe.
Yeah.
But the best way I can describe it is
I died
and it was, I was laughing at the idea of dying. To me, the idea of dying was absurd. It made me feel incredibly powerful. The idea where death is not something to be feared. And that's the first time I've ever felt that. And I felt it. I could feel it.
Yeah. The death fear thing, man, it's such a fucking bummer. It's such a burden. It weighs so many people down.
Oh my God.
They don't want to talk about it even or think about it. And in the reports from near death experiences, what you're talking about, everyone is just universally, it's like the best thing that happened to you.
Yeah.
Like death is like the best. You don't want to go back. You're like, fuck that place. It's weirdly like, it reminds me like, the NDE stuff, it's like when your dog gets out of the yard. Like, you know, these people die and for a second they get out of whatever the fuck this is, which appears to be some kind of yard for sentient beings. And then these beings are like, yeah, you're not done. You got to go back. They're sweet. They're loving, but they send you back into your incarnation. And many people go dragging their fucking feet. They don't want to go back.
Yeah, because it's like... It makes sense why you wouldn't want to go back. Or if you do go back, it's a thing where you have a different outlook. I don't think it's changed. I got to remind myself more of that experience. I think it's something or also just do it again.
Man, you're reminding me of this scary idea I had, which was that, if you wanted to really understand, if you were an alien and you were about to colonize a planet that was already had living beings on it, which maybe aliens, this is one of the problems, is like by the time you find an inhabitable planet, probably some kind of sentient life has evolved onto the planet. And meaning that unless you want to be like brutal and just wipe them out, if there's any kind of universal compassion or ethical anything... Anyway, if you wanted to study a species on another planet, the best way to study them would be to become one of them, right? To put yourself in there, become one of them.
Yeah.
But also not know that you're a probe. You need to go in fully human that you're like in there and fully get the experience of being a human. And then when you die, the reason you feel so relieved is because you're like, oh, fuck, right. Oh, yeah, right. I was studying that planet with a bipedal wingless hominids that we were thinking about colonizing. Yeah, they're assholes. They're fucking horrible. Yeah, just wipe them out. You know what I mean? Do you ever think about that? Like, maybe you're the probe?
I have not thought about that, no. I haven't thought of the probe. I've a lot of times have thought that certain people are maybe... alien intelligence. Like, it seems to me pretty obviously that Mark Twain was probably like a piece of alien intelligence
right.
that was sent to make changes. Maybe like David Bowie or anyone like that. Anyone who's caused a huge shift in consciousness is maybe a person who, it's like a form of biological intelligence that's been sent. Or you could also say the opposite too, which is super scary to think that someone terrible who's wreaked a havoc on the planet is maybe the opposite. It's like a different beings who are trying to destroy the earth by creating some sort of a monster to kill people and plant all kinds of bad, deleterious ideas.
Yeah, they called it I think Crowley talked about this. He called it the Black Lodge. I'm sorry for my Thelemites out there. I fuck everything up that I talk about, but basically the idea is like at the edge of the abyss, there's a lodge, like a temple, where these like exactly the people you're talking about, these sorcerers who are like truly just intent on causing chaos and destruction and pain and like anti-life stuff hang out and like plan their next shit disturbing mission or whatever.
Sow seeds.
I mean, but even then, you know, that seems like a game kind of. There's a kind of playfulness even in that horrible and being like that. Because again, it's like if suddenly everyone on planet Earth remembered, oh, right, we're not even here. This isn't real. There's no such thing as death. We're maybe on a spaceship going a very, very long distance. And as part of the, you know, keeping
Hive sleep, you have to have a simulation to keep the body from just being destroyed or something.
We all remember that simultaneously. Mm-hmm. There's a way to just blink out. It doesn't even mean you die. You just sort of blink out. You just go back on the ship.
Right.
How many people would stay here? Like, and the people who stayed here, would they be looked at as like childish or something? Like, you know what I mean? Like, you guys keep playing make-believe on the fake fucking planet. We have to get back to work. You know, like how many people would stay on the planet as themselves if they knew there was no such thing as death as we understand it? We're infinite beings, non-encumbered by the physical body, capable of transforming ourselves into anything we want at any moment, just temporarily engaged in some exploration of mortality. How many people would keep doing the human thing?
I think I would do it for a while if I knew that, because I'd have a lot of fun.
Yeah, but think of the kind of fun what kind of fun would you fucking have? That's the scary thing. The type of fun people would start having would be really interesting.
Maybe it wouldn't be that great, actually. It just also depends on the spaceship. Like, what's the conditions on the spaceship? What kind of work are we doing on the spaceship? Are you just going from one situation to another?
You're a fucking miner.
It's like, it's not even out of the fire, and not even out of the frying pan into the fire. It's out of the swimming pool into the fucking pit
work.
Of stakes.
You gotta get back to work. You gotta get back to fucking work.
I'm not going back to work. I'm gonna stay here and learn to play every instrument.
Pemberton. Pemberton, get that shit off your fucking head, man. We're finally at the asteroid. We gotta get you on that fucking thing. You gotta start drilling. Zymonite. You're a Zymonite miner.
I would sell out everybody I could to stay like Joe Pantoliano in The Matrix.
Yeah, yeah, you would be that guy. No, they just
Judas. I'd be Judas.
The captain of the ship just wrenches your fucking goggles off and is like, "Fuck you." No, that's like every incarnation is just the ends with like you think you're dying, and it's just this fucking wrinkly, mean space captain ripping your fucking thing off. I'm like, "Get out, man! Get out! You're caught, Pemberton. You're using your goggles too much. You got goggle derangement." You know, you're like, no, I swear, I'm a human. I have a life. I was a comedian on the fucking planet. What are you talking about? You always do this. Smacks you. You start remembering, oh, fuck, I'm a space miner. I'm not a comedian.
So then what happens in the space miner world? What happens if you die in the space miner world? Is it just nothing?
When you die in the space miner world, that's when you put your VR goggles back on, the first thing it does is inject a memory of you like dying in the space miner world. Then you wake up as a human and you're like, I had that dream again where I was a fucking space miner. You know what I mean? And then you go back to your life and forget it. You live your whole life again.
Jesus Christ.
In between every human incarnation, you do like 8 hours of work on a shitty asteroid.
Oh my God. That's hell then. That's what hell is, right?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Is it hell? I don't know. I mean, it's like
something. It's something that's not heaven. It's definitely not heaven.
There he goes again, talking about hell. Shut the fuck up and take your space pick, Pemberton. We're sick of you talking about this being heaven or hell. Get
it to work.
So what happens if I take this laser pick and I cut my legs off?
God damn it. Trank him. He's got space delirium. Yeah, it's like, I don't know, man. But again, like, to me, what's like really hilarious about this line of thinking is this is where we're headed as a species. That's mm-hmm. what the fucking Zuckerberg metaverse is. We are about to get to a point where we can mostly abandon life as we know it, you know, and it's just going to get better and better and better. And the reason that this we're getting to that point is not because where we're at is paradise. You know what I mean? Like, it's not because people are content. We're so miserable, we have to burrow into the digital realm and replicate ourselves in some alternate form so mm-hmm. we can experience things that we don't have the resources to experience in our current lives.
There's going to be so much. It's one of those things that just the idea of it, you can think about a significant amount of resistance. The kind of thing where it is like two camps. It's going to be a lot of, there's so much resistance.
There already is. There already is.
It's going to be a generational resistance.
You're born a dude. It already is, man. Like the very beginning of it.
It started.
And the resistance is so extreme. So fucking extreme. You're going to stay the way you were born. You're not mm-hmm. changing your fucking so you're the way you are. It's the way you fucking are. The way you were genetically predestined to be. These genetic fucking predestination fucking fascists, man. And like, just wait. They will try to make laws. They will try to make it illegal.
They already have made a bunch of laws. I think it's just going to be generational, though, because that stuff takes so much time. You have to wait for those people to die off before you can have a real change, because it's just some people will never, it just doesn't make sense to them, and it's not their fault. It's just not ever going to make sense because they can't feel it. It doesn't make sense to them. It feels weird in their body. It just can't comprehend the idea of something being significantly different or things changing so fundamentally.
Yeah.
It's too much. And it makes sense why it is. I think that makes sense. It just takes so much time to transition.
The moment the technology is there, the moment there is just so, like, you know, theoretically you read like Kurzweil talking about self-assembling nanobot technology, which is essentially what a human being is self-assembling swarms of self-assembling nanobots. The moment that we can get into those nanobots and program them is they, you know, I don't know I'm clearly not a biologist, but something our DNA is like a printer, right? Isn't that kind of how it works?
And it's when we can manipulate the printer.
Right. Then we can tell it the next iteration of me, I want it to be this. 30 years old. I want you to print this out. You might have to like take certain shit so the printer has new ink or whatever. Mm-hmm. But like so the moment it becomes like that, where it's like you molt essentially, I guess. You would molt. I don't know what it would look like, but in like 2 months or 3 months, what are they, how much time is it between when we regenerate a new body?
I don't know. I thought 6 years between full cellular regeneration.
Okay. So you're going to stay how you are. Mm-hmm. And then if you want to change, there's going to be 6 years of transformation. Now, if we could accelerate that so that it's a month, how many of these old fascist fucks are trying
to say no? They're going to agree.
No, they're going to change. Mm-hmm. That's where the hypocrisy will become so clear, which is like all these people who are like digging their heels in regarding humans' autonomy over their physical form, their body, their identity, whatever the fuck they want to be. These are going to be the very same people who cut in line to get the therapy because they want to be younger, older, smarter, different eye color, whatever the fuck it is. And then, you know, and that they'll just be a stampede towards self-transformation. Sure, maybe there'll be a couple of like weird old fucks who are like trying to stop it, but not many. You won't be able to serve. Like, you'll literally be like, all right, stay old and fucking like repressive.
That's going to be temporary, because that'll be a certain period of time, because then the whole idea of having a body is going to be ludicrous.
Exactly. Yeah.
And when that happens, then you get into the whole thing, what is the nature of a soul? That's when that shit happens.
Yeah. Which
is, that's the argument where we just can't have, no one can win it or even have it, because you can't talk about it until we don't even know what we're arguing about yet. Cause it's not even there. We don't even know what it is yet to argue for or against.
Right. Yeah. We're not quite there yet.
That's going to be scary as hell.
It is. I think it is going to be, but the lead up to it is also going to be so scary that by the time we get to it, I think there'll be a certain, like, it's just really, man, to me, like the some of the great problems we're going to run into are all wrapped up in decoding the way human memory works.
Oh my God. Yeah. For
real. You know, so much of a person's identity is their memory. If we can implant memories into a person, then, you know, now we can like change a person's past. If you change a person's past, you can alter the way they're going to be in the future. So like once we get into memory implantation and or memory extraction, oh God, it's going to cause like all these fucking problems. Everyone's like fucking freaking out over gas, which I get. But man, just wait.
Gas prices.
I think, and this is probably idiotic, but I do think you can make predictions based on what people want. And like from that, you can, in these days, you can almost assemble a timeline based on when people will get that thing that they want. Mm-hmm. And, you know, right now in Ukraine, they keep saying like, well, if he uses chemical weapons, biological weapons, why use chemical weapons? Why use biological weapons? Because it doesn't destroy the infrastructure. You use chemical weapons, biological weapons, you get to keep all the toys.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And the job just becomes body disposal. It's so brutal and fucked up. The problem with a nuclear bomb is it irradiates the land for a very long time.
Yeah, it destroys it.
And the radioactive clouds are going to just blow back to Russia anyway. So it's like attacking yourself. If you use a nice chemical weapon, get some fucking smallpox in there, get your soldiers out and just burn the whole fucking population out. Mm-hmm. It's horrible, but this is why they keep saying he might do this, because he gets to keep the stuff and they want the stuff. So, but it's such a brutal thing, right? It's brutal. The next iteration of fucking nuclear weapons is going to be some kind of memory implantation bomb. A wave or something, a weird whoop, and then suddenly everyone just remembers they're Russian. You know what I mean? Everyone's like, oh, I'm
Jesus
Russian.
Jesus Christ.
Oh,
that
I'm
would
Chinese.
Be so crazy.
Oh, the planet is Chinese. Like, oh, it's not even like, it's like everyone just like, oh my God, what the fuck are we thinking with this American thing? We're Chinese. Like, we're all part of whatever the fucking thing is.
Yeah.
Something like that will come, man. A virus or some psychotropic fucking virus that just like replaces your identity with another identity.
That's sounds like some William Gibson shit right there. Like, you know, the author William Gibson.
Yeah.
That's just so spooky that could happen. I've always think that as much as that stuff is possible, I think there's a reason we haven't had any more nuclear bombs since the first two, because there's like the human genome just won't let it happen.
Yeah, and well, thank God. I mean, we're so, like, what are you going to do? Nuke your fucking yacht, your condos? What are you going to do? Nuke your fucking, like, billion-dollar secret mansions owned by your, like, private trust that you have? You're not going to blow that shit up.
No, you want to keep that shit.
You want to keep it. But what would be awesome would be to reprogram instead of invade. Mm-hmm. That would be fucking awesome. And to do it in a way that, like, just makes the place you're invading, like fawning. You know what I mean?
There's an accident. Instead of making everyone think they're Russian and they're fawning for the leader, they become jazz musicians. It's like, oh shit!
What have we done?
The country's obsessed with jazz now.
No! Like no one fucking understands what happened. Biden comes out. He's got a saxophone. He's just fucking
jazz,
playing. He's
100% like, jazz.
Playing jazz. Like Putin's like, oh my God, what? Oh fuck, we gotta fix this.
Nobody goes to work. All people do is just jazz. They do jazz until they die. Just skeletons, just playing drums and bass and saxophone. Just jazz till you 100% jazz.
And you're like the one person who it didn't work on.
Oh, God. That would be hell.
You're like, what? You wake up. You wake up because your fucking neighbor is playing like bass. You're like, what the fuck? Shut up. And then, but it's coming from all of a sudden the whole neighborhood is like doing improvisational jazz together.
Or maybe it's only jazz musicians who are immune to it. So the only people left who are normal are actual jazz musicians. So at first they just think like, wow, man, finally everyone's getting on this jazz train, finally. And they keep doing it. Like, don't you want to go to sleep sometime? It's like, no, jazz.
You're like, just do it. They're like, your friend's got a fucking chopstick in your ear and a mallet. And you're like, do it. Just fucking kill me. Do it. I don't want to hear anymore. I don't want to hear. No more jazz. Jazz planet.
Jazz planet. That would be hell hilarious.
Johnny, thank you so much for
thanks
coming
for having me,
on
Duncan.
The show. We are going to be in Portland in tomorrow.
I don't know. Tomorrow?
I'm leaving tomorrow evening. Soon we'll be in Portland.
I'll see you there.
See you there. Love you, Johnny. Where can people find you, Johnny Pemberton?
You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at my name, or you can listen to my podcast. It's Live to Tape Podcast. It's on, you know, it's on iTunes. It's where all fine podcasts available. Spotify.
You got any shows coming up?
Shows with you. Otherwise, I have my solo show is at the Elysian. It's Friday, April 22nd, I believe.
Cool.
Is the right date. That's Minnesota Reggae Colostomy Bag.
It's such a good show, Johnny. You know, I think about that show a lot.
Really?
It was so moving and good and like inspirational.
It's gotten a lot better too.
I
think it has.
I can't wait to see it again. Friday,
April
22nd.
Check it out.
Beautiful. Johnny, I love you. Thank you so much.
Love you too.
Hare
Bye.
Krishna. That was Johnny Pemberton, everybody. A big thank you to our sponsors and thank you for listening. Come see us in Portland this weekend. I've got a lot of shows coming up. Check out my website. God bless you for listening. I'll see you next week.